Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Hello, my freaky darling. Welcome to Late Night Nerds and the Big Night Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron and Captain as the After Midnight Bombers tomorrow. And Thursdays are split between Entering a World of Strange Magic with Incoherent Dust or Black Lace Diaries featuring Mistress Frost and Mr. M. Fridays are split between Crawling into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babbler as they teach you the fine art of part sinner, part saint. And then on Mondays, join Victoria as she brings you the heart of LMP. Now, these shows are designed to color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host, Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Good evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How's it going?
All right, eh?
Awesome sauce. Very cool. Always great to have a Bukowski night, especially considering we got enough rights to do probably a two-part show.
Yes, I think there might just be that.
Yep. And you definitely chose a nice variety of quotes to inspire people, and they definitely showed up. So, very cool. Yeah. And see here. So, how's the weather treating you down there in your neck of the woods?
Overcast and... right now, it's probably about 65.
That's actually kind of chilly for down there this time of year. I'm not sure what
Absolutely.
Our temperature was.
It's 65
yeah.
on the button, but it is cloudy.
Yeah, that really makes a difference. Yeah, I don't know. Well, I walked to the store today, and it was kind of overcast. So, you know, walked out of the house, I was wearing a sweater, and I got down to the end of my walkway, and I realized it was just not quite cold enough for me to be wearing a sweater. So, you know, it was probably, you know, in the 60s, but it usually has to be quite chilly before I'm wearing thick layers. But, certainly... Well, you know, it can be a beautiful time of year, but it's also kind of a time of year where there's just a lot of the work to be done, and, well, you know how that goes.
Of course.
Yep. But what do you say? Shall we go ahead and start delving into the poetry?
Yowza.
Okie dokie, Smokey. I put up first... Salutations in a State of Grief by Meredith Dark. And go ahead and give that a read for us, Rex.
Salutations in a State of Grief by Meredith Dark. I am enamored by the decaying nature and foibles of the world, who is at heart a suicide state of grace, filling the emptiness with echoes, old screams, hallelujahs consummated, in a conjugal, pack-rape humanity in excelsior. I listen to their hymnal music, the clatter of a dropped razor, the flip-flop of a leaky faucet, like droplets of blood on a cracked enamel basin. Yes, these are the implacable truths, unbearable parables, contrite with justifiable deniability, the exaltation of sadness saturating the collapsed veins of lepers and junkies. I hear it between the empty spaces of my breath, the emphysemic rattling, cigarette smoke, a Jacob's ladder, climbing the veiny, class doesn't matter, because death endures, and we all hustle what little life we have to get a glimpse of a non-existent afterlife by trying to move a curtain that has the micron thickness of a shadow. End poem. And Myriad took, I was born to hustle roses down the avenue of the dead. All right.
That was...
What you think?
Well, first of all, excellent read there, Rex. I really like this, and I like how it's told with the it starts with I am. And it you know, almost has to me, like, I guess it could be the author making the observations, but it almost has, feels to me that the author is writing from the perspective of like, a god, an angel, or even a demon who is observing the behavior of humankind, and I found that really intriguing. I liked the reference to Excelsior, which Excelsior, that was that something to do with King Arthur?
No, that was Excalibur.
Oh, okay. I've heard the word Excelsior before. Right? Yeah, I'm sure I have. Oh, okay, I know where. Like, in like, it's like a Latin word that has something to do with church. It's interesting how this mixes religious imagery, like the hymnal music and the word Excelsior, but then there's the whole idea of the conjugal pack rape. It really just a harsh and brutal line, but I think it makes a really strong statement about the ugliness of humanity and the misdirection of humanity. I also like going down to the very bottom where he mentions by trying to move a curtain that has a micron thickness of a shadow. I feel like that reflect, focuses on the idea of the thin veil between the living and the dead, and how it's only by that thin veil that we don't see each other. I also really like, these are the implacable truths, unbearable parables, contrite with justifiable deniability, the expulsion of sin, sadness, saturating the cleft veins of lepers and junkies. And I think that really focuses on the idea of the misuse of power and the misuse of using religion rather to guide people and condemn people with rules rather than guide them with spirituality. At least, you know, that's some of the thoughts that the poem brought to me. As always, he's got just strong use of imagery and very thought-provoking lines.
Nicely said. I'm going to walk a different path, just a little bit. There's the thought of actually watching and listening to note these things, which you get with people who are people watchers or people listeners. I am enamored by the decaying nature and foibles of the world, who is at heart a suicide state of pursuing the emptiness with echoes. There's that thought of not being within the world itself, but just passing time, walking through, because nobody believes in anything anymore. The thought with the Alleluia is consummated, there's the plastic cracks, climbing the veiny. It all gives me that thought of old, run-down tenement people are living in. You notice those little touches, the cracks that run along the walls, and you hear those alleluias consummated in a conjugal pact, great humanity in Excelsior, those that are doing their business behind those bleak, blank walls. The Excelsior is, I don't know, ever upward or ever onward. I listen to the hymnal music. Then you get the notations, clatter of drops, razor, flip-flop, leaky faucet, like drops of blood on a cracked enamel basin. And yes, that there still hits that notation of the bleakness of the environment. And then there's the thought with justifiable deniability. There's such an ease in that. People use the, hey, I didn't do it. So there is ease of grace of deniability that they can give themselves without actually owning up to the fact that they're destroying, in the meantime, the collapsed veins, lepers and junkies, a Jacob's ladder, so to speak. And we all hustle a little like we have to get a glimpse of non-existent afterlife. There's like the belief has gone out of everybody. And I did like that very last line, trying to move a curtain as the micron thickness of the shadow. Boy, there's a nice thought to the veiled illusion between this life and the next, something you cannot touch until you actually cross over.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up that part about the Jacob's ladder, because, you know, I thought that was also an important and intriguing part. And you're right, there is that idea of, in that one part, of people having the ease of confession, of just, you know, being able to get away with the atrocities they commit. You know, I was Excelsior means ever upward, and I'm pretty sure I've heard it in, like, I used it in a song before, like a hymn. But it's also curled shavings of wood that's used for packing, or used to be used for packing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Up next, we have Right by Eva Pelosi. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. And it goes like this. Leak the last drop of your life sap into spongy consonants and vowels and wedge them between handwritten heartbeats. Squeeze them not more than about to the size of your barbed wire-fenced core. And when even their capillaries have been filled up with still amorphous thought shreds, then and only then resuscitate them exhaling your last sigh into their spelling and grammar until they discharge the electricity of all your tensed nerve fibers. And later just wonder how these own handmade gnomes have drained off your brain cells, squelching, to leave behind emptiness only, though nothing has happened except for the fact your intellect made love to them one after another. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. I was just a little different, the concept of writing and how sometimes what you push out literally sucks the life out of you in the moment. Your life sap in a spongy consonant of vowels wedged in between handwritten heartbeats. There's that notation of I'm not being satisfied in the moment. And then squeeze them not more than about the size of your barbed wire fence core. Again, constriction for clarification. And rolling down the back end of this. And later just wonder how those own handmade gnomes have drained off your brain cells, squelching to leave behind emptiness only. That process of actually feeling that you've carved out something in the moment, but you're not quite sure what, yet you are satisfied because they did spend enough time rattling around despite the inherent fallacy we hold to ourselves of maybe pushing a bit too hard sometimes and then over-evaluating those words to the point that sometimes we shred them, and sometimes if they're crushed enough, they produce a diamond in the rough.
Absolutely.
You?
Well, first of all, I agree with you that the sometimes those words just have to get out, and sometimes it feels, you know, like you have no clue what's going on, but then other times, you, like you said, you find that diamond in the rough. I really think this was a creative and wonderful way to describe the writing process. And, you know, I like how she refers to it as leak the last drop of your life staff into spongy constants and vowels and wedge them between handwritten heartbeat. And then when she goes to the point where she says, and then, where she says this, and when even capillaries have been filled up with still amorous thought shreds, then and only then resurrect them, exalting your last scientific spelling and grammar. And to me, I mean, this whole poem is great all the way through, and it's hard to separate, difficult to separate the parts into what is most important, but that stands out to me because, you know, a lot of people, you know, they write, you know, like straight what comes from their mind, a lot of, you know, kind of that flow of free flow of thought, which is great, but then they don't go back and edit. And she, to me, she's not saying don't edit. She's just saying don't edit until you've squeezed out every last word that's in your mind, in your heart, you know, no matter how absolutely just, you know, offbeat or ridiculous it may seem in the moment, get it written down, and only after that worry about spelling and grammar. I also just find a great delight in the imagery of each poem or each stanza of a poem being a little gnome that kind of just drains your energy, and I relate to that. Because there are times when I write a poem. Now, some days, very rarely, I'll be able to write more than one poem. But oftentimes, I will put so much energy and care into writing one poem that's it. I can't. I just don't have it in me to devote to another one for that day. So I really like the imagery of the handmade gnome. And I like that she called them handmade because they didn't come into existence on their own. You have created them simply because your mind has become obsessed with the idea of these particular words getting out of your head. So I just thought this was a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
All right, what we got next?
All right, and up next we have, Sometimes You Just Have to Pee in the Sink by Sam Sampson, and of course, you will read that, Rex.
Sometimes You Just Have to Pee in the Sink by Sam Sampson. Life is a hustle, man. Disappointments coming at you fast like a punch in the nads. But you've got to rise above, roll with that punch, and dream big dreams. But when all doesn't go to your plan, sometimes you just have to be in the thing. End poem. And yes, that was the quotes that he took. Sometimes you just have to be in the thing. All right, Pam, what you get?
That was actually a pretty popular quote. And this is another great brevity. It almost follows a pattern, like, because it starts, it almost seems to be one of those poems that starts with one syllable and then keeps working up in syllables, but I don't think I see an exact pattern, but it almost has that look. You know, life is a hustle, man. Disappointments is a great line. But I really think what emphasizes this is coming at you fast like a punch in the nads. Like that imagery right there, that just reminds us of how painful and ugly life can be. But I like that within that, in the end line, he has that positive message of roll with the punches. But when all doesn't go as planned, sometimes you just have to pee in the sink. I mean, the whole thing is great. It's got great humor. It reminds us that sometimes shit happens. Toilets get clogged. And, well, if nothing else, there's a sink to pee in.
Yep. Well, it does roll down with the syllabic count, but it also kind of hits on that note. Oh, yes, the dribble starts, and then you get the free flow as you take that game to sink.
Cool.
It hits on that metaphorical angle of, you know what, sometimes you got to say fuck it and throw caution to the wind, because it hits on those notes of, you know what, you're gonna come up against something that's gonna smack you hard in the face, or in this point, punch you in the nads. And you know what, you got to move past the pain and get on with it anyway, because no one else is gonna pick you up except yourself. And that's where the last line hits. Sometimes you just have to see in this thing, fuck it.
I like that thought. The whole idea that, as you said, that you just sometimes have to just, you know, say fuck it and move on. So, very cool comment there, Rex.
All right, what we got there?
All right, up next we have let me click on the poem and then I'll read the title. Stuck, Come and Bucket by Samantha Guffey. And I'll go ahead and give this a read. It says, lost in my head while laying in bed, who wants to get up and fill their cup? Not me, not yet. As I worry and fret, I'm not ready, you see. Just leave me be. Anxiety slithers its ugly head at the thought of getting out of bed. Tick-tock, tick-tock, says the clock. Must push my ship off the dock. At snail's pace, I begin the day. I feel each nerve begin to fray. There is no point until I'm conjoined. End poem.
Like a bad night beforehand. Anxiety slithers its ugly head at the thought of getting out of bed. There's that, what the hell is my day going to bring? You know, I really don't want to get out. And that thought with the until I'm conjoined, it's that note of not being whole in the moment. This part of you understands the note to getting up and needs to get up, but the other half of you is saying, no, I'm not ready. Despite the clock, and I know I should be have my ship being untethered from this dock, but I just don't want to move. I'm tired. I'm sick. I'm just not ready for any stretch of the imagination to this day. All right, what you got?
Yeah, I really liked this, and I have to agree, I like the use of the word conjoined at the very end, because it did give that impression of somebody, like you said, who knows they should be getting up, but they're just not quite feeling like their complete selves. I thought there was a really, but first of all, I thought this was a wonderful write on anxiety, of that anxiety of having to face the day, having to do things and carry burdens that maybe you just don't feel prepared to carry. And lots, like some really great references in here. I like the reference to who wants to get up and fill their cup, because it makes me think of, you know, the saying, you know, you see the cup as half empty or do you see it as half full? Well, the point is sometimes the cup has to be filled by somebody, and you just don't want to be that person. I also liked the reference to the ship. I thought that was really cool. You know, that which says, must push my ship off the dock. But, you know, that whole idea that, you know, of just having to move forward and, again, not being ready to. But I think what particularly struck me with this, and it was a great piece all the way through, was that she put the tick-tock, tick-tock. And I felt like putting that repetitive tick-tock noise that the clock makes, it kind of was that whole idea of your surroundings, of your mind pushing you And it almost added to me, like by having the TikTok there, it added an intensity to the poem and gave us more of the feel of the anxiety itself. So I thought that was excellent write and very well done.
It emphasizes the disassociation felt.
Disassociation?
Yep.
Aha. Yes, yes. That makes sense. I know. Well, isn't dissociative disorder another term for multiple personalities?
It also bites right back to that end line, conjoint, feeling separated in the moment, part of and part not.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It does, like you said, because that's a really good point, it does kind of have that whole idea of dissociative disorder because of that end line with the conjoint. So, cool. I like that. All right. Well, like I said before, it's good to see Samantha writing for our shows, and I hope we keep getting to see more of her. And up next, we have A Deep, Deep Hole by Martha Gettle, and we do have a recording for that one. So let me find that, and here we go.
A Deep, Deep Hole by Martha Gettle. I fell into a deep, deep hole. I went over and over again in a roll. And the flames were rising so high. And the smoke was burning my eyes. And that smoke was blinding me. The way out I could not see. That fire, it was burning up my path. And I wondered if I was up to the task. But let that fire burn, just let it burn. I've got a lot of lessons to learn. Standing when you want to fall down is the hardest lesson to come around. But me, I made it through the flame, and I'll never look at life the same. When the road ahead is only smooth, that's when life is not teaching much to you. But let that fire burn, just let it burn. I've got a lot of lessons to learn. Standing when you want to fall down is the hardest lesson to come around. But when ahead you can only see the fire, and every time you look it's a burning higher, that's when you find out, you know, just how far your strength can go. But let that fire burn, just let it burn. I've got a lot of lessons to learn. Standing when you want to fall down is the hardest lesson to come around. But you can't give in to the flame. Give up, be a loser in life's game. You can win if this you keep in mind. It's just one step forward at a time.
Great read, Martha. Thank you very much to SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And what you got, Pam?
Oh, I really liked this. Again, she says, you know, got a great voice for that kind of like country type song. This actually, like between the lyrics and the way she sang it, it had a whole Johnny Cash vibe to it, to me. Like, I was listening to one of his songs really because I'm trying to find an intro song for our dark show on Friday, and one of the songs I was listening to was by him, and it had, like, you know, there's just kind of that rhythm, you know. Plus, you know, he's got that song, The Ring of Fire. So instantly, that's kind of where my mind went to. You know, wonderful lyrical quality to that. But I like how, first of all, I like how in the first stanza she says, I fell into a deep, deep hole. And so it wasn't like somebody pushed her. It's that whole idea by saying, I fell. It was that whole idea of, you know, oftentimes when we get into holes, it's our own fault. Wonderful visual imagery. I really liked the chorus, but let the fire burn, just let it burn. I've got a lot of lessons to learn. Saying when you want to fall down is the hardest lesson to come around. And I like the tidbits of wisdom in that chorus, with the whole idea of just keep going through the hard times. You know, keep walking through them because, you know, if you, like, lay down and curl up in a fetal position, you accomplish nothing. But there are tasks to get done. There are lessons to be learned. And so just, you know, keep moving forward, even through that fire. And then, of course, I really liked the ending, how how she reminds us that the only losers are the ones that give up on life's game, and that, you know, sometimes moving forward isn't a bunch of big steps in a row. It's one small step at a time. So just an excellent song and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you. I, too, hit on Johnny Cash and The Ring of Fire, and it does walk that same avenue, although his was about love. This is about living life itself. And the idea of you got to walk through the fire before you can actually see the light, so to speak, understand that which is. And there's a line here that kind of hit it well. Where was it? Oh, right. I can't find it. When the road ahead is only smooth, that's when life is not teaching much to you. And there is a great thought, man. If life is easy and you're getting away breezy, then you're not learning a damn thing on that road, and you often forget that which you are into because it is too easy. So the idea of having that burn, that desire to find something more than just have, produces those results, gives you those life's lessons, things that need to be learned along the way so that you can actually take those necessary steps towards your given goal. And that's the idea behind it.
Amen to that. I'm glad you pointed out that part about if you're on that smooth road, you're not learning anything. Because I do think that was a really important part. And I have to say, yeah, Martha, I don't see her voice ever getting as deep as Johnny Cash's, because her voice is like mine. Well, except for she keeps it in tune better. But, you know, in those really, obviously, they're never going to sing anything deep. That's, we save that for you, Rex. All right. So, up next, we have Trick or Treats by Naomi Sarah, and we do have a recording for that one, so here we go.
Trick or Treats. I pop another chip into my mouth, munch it down into nothing. Vinegary salt sticks to my fingertips. I lick them clean, kind of wishing it had been ketchup instead. I always bring home whole piles of different kinds, empty the bags into a bowl, pile dive, and toss one in, never knowing what flavor will tickle my tongue next. I just can't seem to bring myself to choose just one. It would be lots more easier, perhaps more fulfilling, left like a freight train smashing through my teeth. Picking out just one, really digging in deep, down to those last itsy bits, so my taste buds and the savor get properly acquainted. I sure wouldn't get so many different crumbs in my bed. My sheets would take on a familiar, perhaps comforting scent. I wouldn't have as many empty bags, a lot less trash to kick to the curb. Then again, empty bags don't weigh much. And hell, I do enjoy fucking around with salty and sweet and spicy and sour. I love the anticipation, the explosion, the surprise, the racing heartbeat as my tongue mingles and tingles with new savor. But too often, I lay alone at night with aftertaste of bittersweet grinding through my hollering bones. Am I the one having fucking fun, or just the damn one getting fucked?
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It's greatly appreciated. A little bit of humor at the bottom end there. All right, Pam, what'd you think?
All right. Well, before I get into what an amazing extended metaphor this is, and talking about choosing a new flavor of man every night, I'd like to say that I have tried ketchup potato chips, and they are the absolute nastiest chips I have ever tried. And if they're a Canadian thing, I would appreciate it if all Canadians would just keep their ketchup chips, like, up there in Canada. But salt and vinegar chips, especially an extra crispy kettle one, is absolutely yummy. I love kettle chips that are salt and vinegar. Now, with that being said, I really like how she uses the idea, the thought of the extended metaphor of buying different flavors of chips for the different men coming in and out of the bedroom. And how, you know, it's like a different surprise, a different flavor. You know, you just never know what you're going to get. But then, you know, you start, I like how she brings it into kind of, there's that little tidbit of humor, like, you know, about, you know, the mention about how there might not be so many crumbs in the bed, you know, and then, but then it also has that serious note, that tender moment of thinking, you know, maybe it would be nice to have the familiar scent, the familiar flavor, and, you know, and then I really like the imagery at the end. I lay alone at night with aftertaste of bittersweet grinding through my hollering bones. Am I the one having fucking fun or just the damn one getting fucked? And, you know, and then when it gets, it's that whole idea of that bittersweet thing of, you know, yeah, I have a choice. I have a variety. But at the end of the day, I feel like I'm lonely and possibly I'm the one who's getting screwed over. So just a really strong right all the way through. Hard-hitting and emotive and very well done.
Yep, I'll run along some of those same lines. There is a touch of deprecation that walks in this, especially with the back end to a line offering a punchline joke as to sense of self with some biting humor that rolls in with it. So as you get on that, but too often I lay alone at night with aftertaste of bittersweet grinding through my hollering bones. Am I the one having fucking fun or just the damn one getting fucked? It works well with the thought. It kind of hit on that that daily walk of shame, so to speak, in the reality offered. Even though variety hits on the thought of being the spice of life, but obviously if the back end is how you're feeling and that notation, am I having fun or just getting screwed around? It offers up you the familiar note of, yeah, you probably are, if that's the thought at the end of the day, despite the angle of the different kinds, the whole piles of different the empty bags. And even though the admission to the fact that those empty bags don't weigh much, and then there's the thought of being kicked to the curb, so to speak, kind of sets up a really lonely angle. And that's just for the pitchers, math. I think the worst, nastiest pitchers you'll probably get are the ones that are flavored with pickle.
Yeah, you know what? Some of those pickle ones are kind of questionable. Not as questionable as ketchup or some of the new flavors they come out with.
Baked potato. Yeah, let's make a potato chip taste like a baked potato, complete with sour cream, butter, and God knows whatever else. Bacon bits. Yeah, that was egg cheese. That's a real shitty potato chip.
Oh man, yeah. Sometimes they really go overboard. I will try new flavors because I'm really big into trying new things. And which means sometimes I get things that I regret. But
good
yeah,
ones
sometimes
are ones. You want ones that fiery cayenne chips or the sweet and spicy nachos, that's got a nice flavor to it.
Yes. They actually, they used to have, okay, remember the other day, this isn't chips, but I mentioned Snyder's pretzels. They have these pretzel bits, like these like short, thick pieces of pretzels, like that just, you know, like they're not all form-shaped, like they seem like they might have been the odd shapes that didn't fit in any other package. And so they started selling them, and they used to have them in like a buffalo and blue cheese flavor. And then they had them in a honey mustard flavor, and those were so good, but they got rid of them.
Short term, not best sell, especially when it comes to the pretzel angle. Most people like their pretzels normal.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it is all about keeping with tradition. And I can't blame them because, you know, the pretzels, good old salty pretzels are good. I had that before too. Robbie says, unexpected things work out sometimes. I had red pepper dark chocolate. I actually had that too before, the dark chocolate with the spicy red pepper flakes, and it does work out quite well.
Okay.
Yeah. And, but before we talk too much about such a variety of desserts, then I will go ahead and, I forgot. I actually so caught up in Naomi's poem, so caught up in the commenting that I didn't grab the next one. So let me make sure to do that and make sure it's one that you can read.
Now, we're going to go with flavor, stomach vinegar, and reduce it down until it turns into a chocolatey syrup that you can pour over ice cream or apple pie.
I've heard of that before. You know what that probably be really good
with a
real vanilla.
It's sweet with a touch of sour to it, but it's really good.
You know, I think that would be really. You know what else that might be good on is like some sort of grilled fruit, like grilled peaches. And yeah, that does sound good.
Yeah. Something to spice up the cow patties up your area.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, we
I have to explore
these barnyard kids.
Look, kid, Mom brought home some chocolate for you. because that's what we do in Wisconsin and all that fun stuff. All right, Rex, up next we have Confidence versus Doubt by Lord of Beads, and go ahead and did that one. Wait, did I better check that one? Yep, okay, yes, reader. Okay, and go ahead and give that a read for us, please. Are you there, Rex? Did I lose you? Oh, no, I actually did lose him. Okay. Well, tell you what, everyone. I am actually going to grab a poem that has a sound cloud, and I am going to play that, and then I'm going to go, because Rex actually has to be called in. So I will go ahead, get the poem up, start the SoundCloud, and call Rex. And so there's Casey by Dmitri Kropotkin, and I'll be right. And where is that?
Her ample curves bickered with her clothes, teetering between showing the goods and showing good taste. A cigarette perched between her chubby fingers kept finding its way to her waxy red lips, adding a glow to her made-up cheeks like a passing orange firefly. She steadied herself with one elbow on the bar, reminding us of her classy desirability with a wine glass. She had the dilapidated pretty face of a retired film star or receptionist. The love had all been dragged out of her after her second divorce. The first divorce was only heart-wrenching and humiliating. It was the second one that hollowed her out and broke her. No amount of Chardonnay was going to rinse away that stain.
Great read, Dmitri. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. And Dmitri, you boys can keep your virgin. Give me hot old women in high heels with ass that forgot to get old. All right, Pam, what'd you think of that one?
Oh, well, you know, he's got a wonderful reading voice. And again, it's great to see somebody, new, writing for the shows. I like how he goes into describing this woman, and I like that he doesn't describe a perfect, you know, movie star, you know, book fantasy type woman, but rather someone who has chubby fingers and waxy red lips. She steadied herself with one elbow on the bar, reminding us of her classy desirability with a wine glass. She had the dilapidated preface of a retired film star or receptionist. I feel like this almost could have a noir feel to it, but I feel like it's a small piece of a scene in a book or a movie, and within it you're getting a tease, a trailer, an introduction to this woman, and I like how he goes in the very end to no longer describing her physically, but rather telling us what she has been through. The first divorce was only heart-wrenching and humiliating. It was the second one that hollowed her out and broke her. You know, and then he reminds us that she's a person with feelings who his heart has been broken, whose soul has become hollow, and she's trying to fill that emptiness with drink. And the whole time, he's observing her as a woman, looking at her and her curves and the way she moves. And I think there's just something, I don't know what the right word is to it, but I really just appreciate it and like this poem, and I thought it was very well done.
It was. It's got a nice who cast the seals with the rejoicing word, bickered, teetering, passing orange firefly, desirability, dilapidated drag, heart-wrenching, humiliating. There's some nice, careful notes. This is almost like a tease in the moment, as opposed to the some of the crude rites you get from the bedroom angle that he offers up. This kind of walks that notation of first glimmer, first glimpse of that which she sees in the bar, because she's already, her elbows perched on the bar, and he hits on the note of a dilapidated pretty face with odd film star or receptionist. So there's the outline of beauty that was once there and still holds a little edge, but the love had been dragged out of her after a second divorce. The first was heart-wrenching and humiliating. It was the second one that hollowed her out and broke her. And that's the notice that he gives to her. And that's all in the last line. No amount of Chardonnay was going to rinse away that stain. But that gives that notion of this is the one, this is the type of woman that he enjoys, because, as he put it, they appreciate a good fuck and don't give second thoughts to the a little cheesy line here or there offered up in the moment. It's all about the need, the want, the feel in the moment. That was really well done. I enjoyed that. Thank
Absolutely.
You, Dimitri.
Yeah, well said there, Rex. I like how you mentioned how it's all about the feeling of the moment and being caught up in that moment. So excellent comment. All right, we are going to see if you don't drop and try this again.
All
right.
Me, damn it.
I wasn't anywhere near hanging up on you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like all right. I'm tired of you. I'm going to do this show all by myself. All right, go ahead and
Confidence
give out.
Versus Death by Lord of Deeds. Stupid people know only one path, so they follow the same path with complete confidence. Smart people know different ways, but the fear of failure makes them hesitant and make it difficult for them to make confidence and skepticism indicate a person's IQ. Religious men are skeptical about going to heaven. Non-religious people are sure that there is no hell. Both confidence and doubt are the criteria for measuring faith. Smart people doubt that they can change themselves. Ignorant idiots will surely change the world. Both self-confidence and doubt are the signs of personality development. Obsessive compulsive disorder patients doubt they did the right thing. Proud idiots are sure to do their best. Both confidence and doubt indicate the type of mental illness. It is as if doubt has weak eyes and confidence has strong glasses. We have to go from the stage of doubt to the stage of confidence. I'm sure you read this post. If you are sure this post is good, I won't have any good news for you. End poem. And as it goes, the prompt taken was the problem with the world is that intelligent people are full of doubt while the stupid ones are full of confidence. Where are you going to go with this one? Uh-huh.
Well, I have to say, first of all, that is absolutely one of my favorite Bukowski quotes. I really like Lord of the Bees poetry. I do get curious how he chose his all poetry name. Some people, like, they have names that you go, huh, I wonder where that came from. Like, it feels like it must have come from a poem or something, you that are just into beating.
The Lord of Bees down in Darlene. Tossing out the beads to get the girls to spin.
Oh, okay, those kind of beads, there's all kinds of beads that we could be talking about, but
let's not bend over and take the back side of things.
Oh, you knew exactly where my mind was going. All right, but I like how he starts out with stupid people know only one path, so they follow the same path with complete confidence. And I think one of the things that makes people, and I don't really like to use the word stupid because I believe everybody has their intelligence in their own way, but I feel like what people do is they deny themselves the opportunity to grow and have new experiences. And by passing on those opportunities, that to me is what I guess I would refer to as being stupid. When you have the opportunity to learn from somebody, you know, and you don't. And I really like obsessive compulsive disorder patients doubt they did the right thing. Proud idiots are sure to do their best. Both confident and doubt indicate the type of mental illness. I thought that was, so, you know, this is a great read all the way through, but that stood out to me in the whole idea that we have this idea of what normal is, what's supposed to be right and like in the center, like as if it was a balancing beam, you know, like not a balancing beam, but like a seesaw, and you were, you know, right in the middle is normal, but on one end or the other to either extreme, whether it's the person who obsesses or the person who is so lackadaisical that they aren't even concerned at all. Like they think everything will just take care of itself. I like how he mentions that both extremes can be looked at as a mental illness. And I like there to me it's kind of a little bit of humor. And I'm sure you read this post. If you are sure this post is good, I won't have any good news for you. You know, I don't know, I just felt like that was such a kind of almost a humorous way to end this poem because there's a lot of thought put into this poem. There's a lot to chew on and think about. But, you know, I feel like part of what he's saying is if you just sit here doing nothing but thinking about this poem, then you're not going to be moving forward and learning new things. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well, I'm going to bite with that last one, I think, Pam. If you assure this post is good, I won't have any good news for you. I like that because as it comes to the prompt, I put this one in deliberately because I think if Bukowski were alive today, he'd have a whole lot to say about changing this talk because there sure are a whole hell of a lot of intelligent people out there who are confident, weight as their means, and those they consider of us that are stupid are the ones that are full of doubt. So I that ending line hits on that note, and I thought how that quote hits now as opposed to when he offered it up, he'd have a whole lot more to say about it. But it does point at even stupid, there are very stupid people out there that are confident as hell and don't show any bit of doubt. But they're questioning thoughts too. Religious men are skeptical about going to heaven. Non-religious people are sure there is no hell. Both confidence and doubt are the criteria for measuring faith. And there's a good portion of truth in that. And I thought that the idea of the mental illness was a nice touch to obsessive compulsive disorder patients doubt that they did the right thing and proud idiots are sure to do their best. Both confidence and doubt indicate the type of mental illness. And that's a nice touch on that, too. And it is a doubt has weak eyes and confidence has strong glasses. Now that's quite a thought there, too. We have to go from a stage without to a stage with confidence. And the idea is, well, maybe today with the idea of all this, if those supremely intelligent persons just weren't so busy thinking they knew how to do everything, there might be a little streak of doubt that walks within their minds because they're not the epiphany that they claim themselves of today. And I think that's where that last line fits on into the thought of I won't have any good news to you, kind of a telling tale.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. It makes me think of the saying that a smart person, an intelligent person, knows they have even more to learn. It also made me think of what is that they say, if you can't convince them with wit, baffle them with bullshit. I don't think that's exactly it. I only remember the baffle them with bullshit.
No, that's not right.
I think that's slightly varied, but yeah, that's basically the whole idea. Like, if you don't have an intelligent argument, just throw the bullshit in their face and convince them you know what you're talking about. And that's an approach that a lot of people take. All right. Up next, we have You Kill Me by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. When the dancing eventually stops, and it will, how can that even be another shatter, another kill, to something that hasn't mattered for years? Darling, such gloom in your broken face. I dare say I see a tear. I believe it belongs to both of us. You're man enough to admit causing our conflict. You're sweet enough to twirl your hair in endearing nervous affliction. A man that's tender and that strong is the one I want. Hear your melody, honey bun. Why are you the only one who believes that this is the last time you'll do that to me, to us? I wait not to surrender but to sink. Baby, please look in my eyes. There is no such thing as 10 last times. And it's insulting for you to think that I think otherwise. End poem.
And Julie Cook, find what you love and let it kill you. And boy, does this kind of walk that note of abuse and still walking back in knowing, oh, yeah, first time it happened, hey, it's your fault. You made me do it, so to speak. But it keeps happening. You end up. The thought of love killing you is the opposite angle in this, where the abuse comes in, because you're there as the abused, while the abuser continues to do the manipulation angle. And she highlights a number of words, even be, causing, there is no such thing, you, that I. Then there's that notation of finally coming to terms with the fact that the love you hold for him is killing you because of what he's doing to you to begin with.
I have to say, I really can and get into what you said. And it is true, there is that a sense of manipulation comes with somebody who is an abuser, or maybe like even an alcoholic or an addict who just keeps doing the same behaviors and getting, forgiven over and over again. And what I find interesting about this rite is that it seems to be from the point of view of a woman who isn't ready to walk out of the relationship yet, who is, doesn't like want her abuser to leave because she's convinced that there's good in him, and she's convinced that it's her job to forgive him over and over again. It reminds me of the quote in the Bible where somebody asked Jesus, how many times should I forgive my enemy? 7 times, and he said, I tell you not 7 times, but 77 times 7. It was like, I can't remember, it had something with the number 7. It was like this, and basically the whole point wasn't that Jesus said there was an exact number, but he gave like a really huge number to give the idea that you should just always be willing to forgive, that there is no exact number. But the thing is I think people often misuse or misunderstand the concept of forgiveness as being that you need to actually physically stay with the person. And I don't, you know, that to me is definitely not true. Forgiveness is something you do in your heart, you do in your mind, but you oftentimes have to physically remove yourself. And I like that instead of putting this at a point where the woman has put down her foot, said, I've had enough, she has it at the point where she still wants to keep trying. And why I like that is because it adds a raw vulnerability, and it becomes relatable to people who are at that point in that kind of relationship. So, you know, just a wonderful comment you made there, Rex, and just an excellent write by Julie.
All right, what we got next?
All right, and up next we have, let me get back to late night poets, and we'll find out if I actually grabbed a poem, or if I was just so busy talking and listening. Oh, no, I did not grab a poem, so let me see what we have next. Oh, I think we'll go for getting another SoundCloud done. So I'll go ahead and grab the next one. And up next we have New Broom Sweep Clean by Eric Svensson. And I'll go ahead and find that SoundCloud and push play. Here we go.
New broom sweep clean. Corporeal concerns shoved aside, I slide heavenwards, jettison through stratosphere hymen, somersault into deeper space, creation's curtain drawn further back. When students are ready, teachers manifest. Creation's cauldron expands. NASA technology footage reveals a new kid on the block. NGC 6960, the Witch's Broom Nebula. Fiddlesticks, fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell the breath of a stellar femme fatale. Let me be alive or let me be dead. She'll grind my bones to make her bread. Six of one and half a dozen of the other. New brooms sweep clean, but old brooms know all the quirky quasar corners. Remember that movie, The Graduate? My, oh my. Pudding and pie, Dame Anne Bancroft. Still think Brister Burr composed Lady in Red for her. Poetia pushed Dustin Hoffman right off that Lilo. Older woman, beam me up. Lion King immediately becomes Baloo Bear. Bottom wiggles, eyes jiggles. Mature ladies understand the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. With Anne Bancroft, I forgot about my worries and my strife. She taught me the bare necessities, shared old Mother Nature's recipes. So, what do you think, folks? This old flame NASA calls NGC 6960, the Witch's Broom Nebula. Do you think she's going to teach us menfolk a trick or two? May her voice sound like cars. hypnotic, deep throat octaves soothe away all modern day stresses and strains. Must say, something happens when I study alluring space face in poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for the sound cloud. It's greatly appreciated. And of course, Eric, so you boys can keep your virgins. Give me hot old women in high heels with ass that forgot to get old. I said humor in that one. Great picture, too. All right, Pam, what you got?
Oh, my goodness. This is so much fun. I like how it's about the study of space, but also the study of sensuality and culture, and the references to the Disney cartoon, the Jungle Book, has me singing the bare necessities inside my head. You know, he just really, when it comes to using pop culture references, I find that he is like a master at that. And I really like Creations, Cauldron Expands, NASA Technology Push Reveals a New Kid on the Block, NGC 6960, The Witch's Broom Nebula, Fiddle 65, Full Plum, I Smell the Breath of a Stellar, Femi Fatale, Let Me Be Alive or Let Me Be Dead, She'll Grind My Bones to Make Her Bread. And I like how those lines touch on the power of the nebula, but also on the power of a confident woman who knows that she looks great in a pair of high heels. I found it very clever when he said, older women beam me up, Lion King immediately comes Baloo beer, bottom bear, bottom wiggles, eyes jiggle, mature ladies understand the bare necessities. And the wordplay by turning bare into B-A-R-E as in being naked was really just a nice, clever, and humorous touch. And then I like how he stuck with that theme and then mentions at the end, do you think she's going to teach us menfolk a trick or two? May her voice sound like Ka's, hypnotic, deep throat octaves. There's a wonderful touch of sensuality and within those lines that I really appreciate. It's an excellent write and very well done.
I like the well-played allusion and metaphors got rolling through this. They're sort of jettisoned through stratosphere, Hyman. When students are ready, teachers manifest. You hit on that in the second stanza. Footage reveals a new kid on the block, so the inference it rolls into a youngster being taken in by an older lady for the learning. That bottom end of that is, I smell the breath of a Stella Femme Fatale. Let me be alive or let me be dead. She'll grind my bones to make her bread. There's that note to played out. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. And then rolls right into the graduate, which hits on that very same notion that he's offered up in the first two. But now he's actually getting into the boat with the graduate and Bancroft and Dustin Hoffman. And then the thought rolling into becomes Baloo Bear, bottom wiggles, eyes jiggle. There's that note of Baloo doing his dance. Mature ladies understand the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. He takes the note of that from the cartoon itself and drops it in between with the graduate with Anne Bancroft as the lead-in. With Anne Bancroft, I forget about my worries and strife. She taught me the bare necessities, shared all Mother Nature's recipes. So is that going back to the note in the first stanza about when students are ready, teachers manifest. And then again, back to the thought with the space angle to finish out. And the thought with Ka offering a hypnotic deep throat octaves kind of has me thinking of like Bacall with that that little deeper voice, that smoky voice, and a couple of other actresses from back in the 40s and 50s who had that deeper angled voice that kind of hits that deep throat octave that kind of soothes the arena when it comes to an older lady that he's getting into. And then I study her lyrics space to finish off again that that angle of played out from the heavens, as if to say, thank heavens for the older ladies that come my way.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up the part, the references to The Graduate, because that had been I had thought about while we were listening to the recording. I forgot to mention, I think that was an important part that really just a great reference to the relationship between a younger man and an older woman teaching him the ropes. So, all right. Up next, we have To Die Again by Angela. And that has a recording also, so I'll find that. And I think I will anyways. It's got to be, right? Okay. Oh, there it is. Okay, I found it.
To Die Again. I found out long ago a certain love for words, in stringing them together like beads in a necklace. As I write my little words, I die a little. A part of me withers more and more, even as I breathe. Yet like a phoenix, I am rejuvenated by the very strand of words I let go. The words I let flow. The words I let fly, so that a part of me can die. I am reborn after every poem written down, only to die again as I write more words on paper.
Great read, Manuel. Thank you very much to SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. I like the opening to Die Again, but also it's a noted touch of sensuality within this. Yet like a phoenix, I am rejuvenated. I am reborn after every poem. And then I die a little, a part of me withers more and more, even as I breathe. That note to the dying a little kind of hits on the thoughts of petite mort, the little death. And because of that, only to die again as I write more words on paper and yet to be reborn with each new piece rekindled, kind of hits on that note of satisfaction going out through the sensual angle. All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, that was a great comment. I like how you mentioned the sensual angle of the right, and that makes sense because, well, and I can't speak for everybody, but I think most people, when they are being physically intimate, are putting themselves fully, physically and emotionally, into that moment. And most poets, when they're creating a poem, are putting themselves into creating that poem fully, physically and emotionally in that moment. And so there's definitely that connection. I like how she likens the whole idea of the love for words and stringing them together like beads in a necklace. So it's not that, words, sometimes there are certain words that you see them individually and you are like, I like that word. That is a really cool word. I know I do that sometimes. If Aziana does that sometimes when a poem is read on a show, we'll kind of nosedive into just one word. But for the most part, you see words by themselves and you immediately want to see in your mind and on the piece of paper what words you can put them together with. I also really like how she mentions at the end, I am reborn after every poem written down, only to die again as I write more words on paper. There's such a continuation of life and death, of renewal and rebirth, with the whole idea of just giving so much of yourself into the process of creating. So I really think this is just a wonderful writing, very well done.
Well, as you said, where would you like to go now?
All right. Well, up next we have... Back to Late Night Poets. We have Dogs from Hell by Chinaski, and that, I believe, is our last song club for the night. And then we'll be reading. And let me find that. And here we go.
Night crawls through shadows, emptiness in halls, finding flowers growing through toilet phases, hollow echoes, spoken word. Exposed creatures beneath the lies of discontented madmen, revealed, concealed, in frenzied conspiracy. Diving tongues deliciously deep into petals, poisonous allure, shaking me inside out as butterflies loop the loop, fluttering into darkness. Crackling eggshell, skull bone decomposed into fertile seeds, growing roses among infinite billowing sea. Suspended songs, porcelain curves, eating wordy bones, spitting out pearls. Endless caves, paint sprayed graffiti walls, scripting paradise. On thorny toilet stalls, porcelain smooth chrome illuminated under neon. Vague and dizzy skin swells, encroaching sounds, monotonous voices. This is fear, attraction being swallowed.
Great read, Chinaski. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It's greatly appreciated. And he took a number of songs. Poetry is what happens when nothing else can. The problem with the world is when intelligent people full of that, once you're the ones that are full of confidence. Find what you love and let it kill you. I was born to hustle roses down the avenue of the dead. One can never be sure whether it's good poetry or bad acting. And I did like this one, too. Nothing is worse than to finish a good shit, then reach over and find the toilet paper container empty. Even the most powerful human being on earth deserves to wipe his ass. And finally, being alone never felt right. Sometimes it felt good, but it never felt right. All right, Pam, what you got?
I really like that he played with a variety of the prompts, and I do have to agree that quote about reaching over and find the toilet paper roll empty is, just really an awesome one. Chinaski has a really great reading voice, and I have to say that when it comes to judging this contest, it's not going to be an easy one to judge because there's definitely some just top-notch poetry in this. I like how he... There's really a beat poet jazz type feel to both his reads and the way he presents his imagery in those short, impactful lines. I really like exposed creatures beneath the lies of discontented madmen revealed, concealed in frenzied conspiracy, diving tongues deliciously deep into petals, poisonous allure, shaking me inside out. I mean, the imagery is great all over. But I like how it seems to be about how, to me, I get that idea of the lies that come to surface and that we swallow them down as if they were the nectar in the center of the flower. I also really like suspended songs, porcelain curves, eating wordy bones, spitting out pearls, endless caves. I mean, it's great all the way through. But, it really just makes you think Well, I don't know. I just, you know, I get this whole idea of praying to the porcelain god, of being sick in the toilet bowl, and trying to flush all the problems away, but, you know, they won't go away. They're just, I don't know, just really just absolutely intriguing and thought-provoking imagery on how truly ugly life can be. You know, especially when we lean heavily on lies. So excellent write and very well done.
Okay. I like the bend in this. Throughout the whole thing offers up a continuing singularity. The first one, toilet vases. And then exposed creatures kind of hits on that thought again with the toilet. Then, what was it? Porcelain curves, again with the toilet. Dirty toilet in number six. And again, it kind of hits the thought with finishing out the traction being swallowed. There is a notation, it kind of still thought of the back angle of things, toilet based. I like that opening there, stands itself. Poetry is what happens when nothing else can. And that hits on that thought right there, especially with the ending line of a spoken word hitting on the beat angle towards offering up the new thought today, which is spoken word. The second one hits on, what was that? Hits on the angle with the intelligence between smart people and super people, and the confidence that rolls within therein. But he kind of hits on the back end of that note, too. Exposed creature beneath the lies of discontented madman, revealed, concealed, and frenzied conspiracy. So he kind of turned that one on its head as well, as I brought up a little earlier with another write we had. Now, this one, find what you love and let it kill you. That's kind of a great point with number three. Diving tongues, this deliciously deep in the petals, poisonous allure, shaking inside out as butterflies loop, flooding into darkness. There is both the death and the life in that stanza itself, and it works itself well into the voice. What else we got? Suspended songs, forcing curves, eating wordy bones, spitting out pearls. Is that nice? Was it either good poetry or bad acid trip? I like that story. And again, number six, I did. That was the one with the empty toilet paper roll, endless capes, paint, braid, graffiti walls, stripping paradise on thorny toilet stall. There's a nice thought there. Graffiti walls, stripping paradise. Hey, want a good time? Call this number. And then the thought back in a porcelain smooth, chrome illuminated under neon. It's talking about being exposed in a moment with no toilet paper. There's nothing there that's handy at all, except maybe your own hands. And then you got to wonder, is the water working the same? or just say, pull your damn pants up and say, shit, well, I ain't worrying about my hands. The pants can I can deal with later. I enjoyed this.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. Like you said, some great dry humor. And, sometimes, well, if you have somebody at your house with you, which, obviously not everybody does, you can always just holler until somebody brings the toilet paper. But even that in itself puts you in a very vulnerable position, especially if you're hollering at a moody teenager to bring you a roll of toilet paper.
Well, especially if you've got the matches and the place stinks.
Exactly. Yep. And all right. So up next, I have Putting Down Words by Rob Azza. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Putting Down Words by Rob Azza. One of my balls had an ingrown hair, and it stung like a paper cut, mashed up and swelled to the touch. The hair was rock hard, buried under puffs, and red skin, tight as the ass of a ballerina on Broadway. And I scraped and pulled at it and squeezed on it most nights when I was trying to put down words with wine and smoke and a screaming couple across the courtyard, soon to pass out, because back then it was all I had, this dime-sized pussball bugging the shit out of me and my ball day and night. And I just wanted to get back to my words, but this sick sack of scum dominated my days and nights, and I just wanted to put down some words, but with the scratching and constant throbbing and the enduring smell, I'd end up just sitting there in my torn white and tank at night, waiting for the screaming to stop across the courtyard and the wine to empty and the smokes to pile up, picked up my ball, just trying to put some words down. And damn. All right, Pam, this one's all yours. Have at it.
Oh, my goodness. So you want me to pick at this one then, huh? Yeah. Well, you know, at least with this one, I'll say I knew from the first line that this one was definitely going to be given to you to read. You know, this really just, you know, I like how you went with the extended metaphor of the ingrown hair on the ball. And there's a raw, gritty, ugly honesty to this because, you know, we've all had ingrown hairs. At least I believe most of us have, and they can get extremely painful. And what I like is that there's a brutal ugliness to this about the everyday life and how the human body isn't perfect. But I think the most important point to me of this poem is that a couple of most important points is, first of all, that while we're writing these beautiful words of wine and smoke and, you know, we're seducing people, you know, either physically or intellectually with our words, we're making them think, you know, we're being profound and romantic. And in the meantime, behind the scenes, there's the reality of life, where our homes are a mess, our bodies are a mess. We've got ingrown hairs, we've got pimples and wrinkles, and it's time for a shower, but we're so obsessed with writing a poem. And I really think that this works really well on the whole idea of obsession and how we just become so constantly obsessed with it to the point of, you know, enduring the smell, enduring the constant throbbing. So I just really just thought this was an excellent extended metaphor, and I really liked the way he used the imagery, not only imagery, but he reminds us of the pain of obsession. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, thank you for leaving me nothing. It's brutal, it's ugly, yet it's beautiful anyway because of that extended metaphor and the clever use of using his balls and the thought of what is happening to him as the notion for the pressing, trying to press out those thoughts that are sitting there, they're bulged. They're sitting on the tip of his tongue and swirling around in his mind, yet in the moment they're not coming. And even with the wine and the smoke and everything, and the courtyard, with the screaming cup across the courtyard, that's another tidbit to the illusion of there are other things that are also pushing against the mind in the moment, which is keeping that from blooming. But hell, this blooms on a level all by itself. Because of the heavy indulgence to his one ball that's swollen, it's full of pus, gum, the constant scratch, the throbbing. That's all indicative of too much thought, too much wine, too much smoke, and yet can't stop picking, can't stop niggling because He knows something is sitting there waiting to be retrieved and jotted down. Nicely done, Rob. That was definitely a brutal, but quite a touch of humorous too. Was it you've taken it and bombed it into another world by making it look as nasty as possible to imbue how hard it is sometimes to actually get something out of your mind and onto paper. Nicely done.
I like that thought. I think that's really just spot on there. And like you said, in the whole idea of how, like you just said, how difficult it can be get your thoughts out on papers at times. So great comment there, Rex. All right. And up next we have Lex, the Daisical Ambition by Inner Sanctum. And speaking of cool words, now lackadaisical, that's a cool word. Okay, and it goes like this. I have so much ambition, but I lack the proper fire, for sloth is my condition, and it feeds on my desire. Success takes lots of discipline, and that's a trait I lack. I may attempt it now and then, but I always go back to laziness, my inborn state, as it's my comfort zone. To be a loafer is my fate. I'm shiftless to the bone. I still have goals I'd like to reach. Those thoughts stay in my head. I shun the lessons they might teach for lounging in my bed. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And in her book, my ambition is handicapped by laziness. And boy, that was a nice run of Ryan Thorpe rolling through this. Got plenty of ambition, but no fire, or sloth is my condition and it feeds on my desire of being lazy. It's a nice, easy tone of thought to that. And again, hitting on the next one, success takes lots of discipline, and that's a trait I lack. I may attempt it now and then, but I always go back. So it is the fallback angle, that which is ambient and clear is that note of sloth. Even though now and then you pop up, take your head out from under the covers and I got something here. But still, you go to your fallback position as that which you enjoy the most. I still have goals I'd like to reach. Those thoughts stay in my head. I shun the lessons they might teach while lounging in my bed. Again, a clear note to the prompt itself, and actually a hell of a thought that rolls easily off the tongue. What you got?
Absolutely. Well, I like this rate. As always, she's got a wonderful rhyme and flow. I like that she touches on the idea that ambition is something that's in your head. You know, you can be an ambitious person, but unless you have that fire, that drive to move it forward, it's not going to mean anything. I like this all the way through, but I also like that third stanza where, you know, she mentions, to laziness, my inborn state, as it's my comfort zone. To be a loafer is my fate. I'm shiftless to the bone. I like the use of the word shiftless. I also like that she mentions comfort zone, because I think that's why a lot of people don't move forward in life, you know, that they decide to just accept the state that their life is in, because, you know, even though the state your life is in might suck, the familiar, it's the comfort zone. So I like that she touches on that. So just excellent brevity and very well done.
What we got next?
All right. Up next, we have Peeing After Midnight by Oak Blue 34. And go ahead and give that a read, Rex.
Well, that's kind of apropos. Being After Midnight by Blue 34. Woke up at 3 a.m. Toilet. Like my life, clogged. Peed in this and drank yellowish liquid I'm sure was pee. Fell into bed until dawn bristled with too much light in my beer-stained eyes. So it goes. Yesterday, I peed in garden. Lots of ammonia for plants. Besides, dogs do it all the time. Once peed in woods. Couldn't hold it for foul-smelling, fly-infested porta-potty at trailhead. Even peed over the rail at Cousin Harry's while his guests gazed at me in disbelief until a guy unzipped, joined me in a hot stream of yellow liquid that flew 20 meters to the pine needles below. Thank goodness no one was down there or they'd be pissed. End poem. All right, little biting human there.
Oh,
a little bit of watering.
Right. Oh my gosh, I really liked this one. As you said, there definitely is a bite of humor, and you know, I think, you know, obviously physically it's different for us women, but we all have had our moments where there's not a workable toilet around, and we have to desperately go. And I like how he brings us into all these different scenarios where you can find yourself, you know, shitting in the woods, having the pissing contest over the fence. You know, I like, so he goes, so it goes, yesterday I peed in the garden, lots of ammonia for plants. Besides, dogs do it all the time. I thought that was a really great reference. What I like about Oak Blue 34 is when he writes Bukowski poetry, you can definitely, you've got the Bukowski flavor in it, but he doesn't swear in his poetry necessarily, but there's still like that gradient. And that play on words where at the very end where he says, no one was down, thank goodness no one was down there or they'd be pissed. Now that was awesome. You know, my brother-in-law, when he was in college, had a roommate that would come home drunk and always like pee in the laundry basket. So he moved the laundry basket to behind the TV, and that night the roommate came home and peed in the laundry basket, even though it had been moved to a different area. And it just, I don't know, it just made me think of that story. But anyway, just an excellent write. Very fun.
Laundry baskets have holes in them.
What's that?
Laundry baskets have holes in them, so I don't kind of, that's kind of a why bother?
Right? Well, I'm guessing his roommate was pretty drunk.
All right. Let's see. I'll take this for the humor that rolls into this because it hits on too much. Because he hits on that fourth line in the opening stanza. Actually, peed in the sink, then drank yellowish liquid, I'm sure was tea. Yeah, you might want to rethink that one. Fell in bed until dawn bristled with too much light for my beer-stained eyes. And again, I peed in the garden, lots of money for plants. Hey, it's nice. Dogs do go on. Huh? True. But the foul-smelling flying fest of porta-potty at trailhead. Yes, those are nasty. Now, the thought that rolls through this is all about peeing in the sink, but it is taking that thought and rolling it off as a long haul, kind of a bit of fun that works its way down the page and holds itself true to the thought itself, because that last stanza is funny as hell, just for the act that, yeah, you were pissed enough to pee over your cousin Harry's railing and then have somebody else pissed enough to actually stand there and join you and have a little bit of fun at 20 meters off the floor of the forest, so to speak. So you're back to the front end where the beer-stained eyes reveal themselves once more on the back end of this piece. And, yep, if anybody was down there, they'd be pissed as well as pissed on. Like the old saying goes, better be pissed off than pissed on.
Exactly, exactly. But I do think that was like just really a fun way to end that poem. And, you know, because what I really like about that too is it reminds me, it makes me think of how, like, I think it's like in Britain and, you know, those kind of areas where pissed means drunk, or maybe I'm thinking of Ireland or, you know, Great Britain. And so, like, in America, we say pissed, and we mean angry. And in some areas, they say pissed, and they mean drunk.
That was my reference by saying it that way.
Aha, aha. Sometimes it's difficult for me to pick up on every single word, but, you know. Well, great minds think alike. All right, so I have a Bucket Out Loud, which is a song parody of Shout It Out Loud by Kiss. Rex, if you know the song, go ahead and sing it. If you don't know the song, just go ahead and read it.
Sing one again. Duke It Out Loud by Dammit Dave. Well, the smart feel dumb and the dumb feel smart, but the dumb are merely blinded. For what you love, let it tear you apart. Got to be more open-minded. It doesn't matter what the wise men say, if the frankincense and myrrh aren't gold, every poet's got to have his say. Everyone has got to break that mold. Buke it out loud. Buke it out loud. If you find desire in a walk through fire, joy is all that really matters. Don't hold it in if you need to inquire. It will leave your brain in tatters. Go sell your roses on the street of the dead. Let the thorns prick the blood from your hands. You've got to let the steam out, come out of your head. You got to rise and take a stand. Buke it out loud. Buke it out loud. Buke it out loud. Buke it out loud. And boom. And Dave, just a couple of thoughts. The problem with all these intelligent people, find what you love and let it kill you. What matters most is how well you walk through fire. I was born to hustle roses down the avenue of the dead. And he had way too much fun with this.
I have to agree. It was definitely a really fun parody. You know, I like how he even put in the what I would call like the echoes, like blinded, minded. You know, I like the repetitiveness of you know. Well, you say Buke, but I say Buck, so I don't know. Why do you say Buke?
Bukowski, Buke.
Is it pronounced Bukowski? I thought it was Bukowski. Oh, okay.
Bukowski. It's a matter of pronunciation.
Well, still, there's got to be a single pronunciation. That's like when my sister was engaged to her husband, and he kept their last name is Stasel, and he kept going back and forth between two pronunciations. And she said to him, "Listen here, if I'm going to marry you, you have to decide how our last name is going to be pronounced." You know. But, yeah, I suppose they're probably, and like with all, a lot of last names, you know, and especially some of those more, like.
Oh, yeah, I knew a couple of guys way back when. One was named Fuchs, but we always called him Fux because it was F-U-C-H-S. So, and the other one, his name was Seaman, S-I-E-M-O-N. So he went the other route and said, no, that's Simone. Okay.
I went to school with a kid whose last name was Siemens. We also had my eighth grade social studies teacher's last name was Jokic.
Should have tried some powder.
But, yeah, I really did. I really enjoyed your read of this, and I like how you sang the Bukit, Bukit, Bukit out loud. I like that Dave had a lot of fun writing this. This is great all the way through, but I think my favorite part is it doesn't matter what the wise men say, if the frankincense and myrrh aren't gold, every poet's got to have his say. Everyone has got to break that mold. And I like the idea that he says, you know, don't listen to those who set tradition. You know, write your poetry your own way. Use your own voice and feel free, you know, to break out of that box. So great write all the way through, but that was the stanza that really stood out to me. So very well done.
Well, Dave doubled down on this. Duke it out loud. That was also part of the contest name. Come and Buke it out loud. So I think
yep.
Before he even got into the thoughts of what it was, oh yeah, I'm going to go right to Kiss with shout out loud as the theme, and then work into the prompts that he chose. So he went double down on that. And great, so go sell your roses on the street of the dead. Let the thorns prick the blood from your hand. You've got to let the steam come out of your head. You've got to rise and take a stand. There's a nice thought there of bleeding out that which you pour out as well as you get out loud, so to speak. So he had way too much fun in this, and he stuck to the song, and the parentheses, matters, patters, and minded, blind, and so on, that's for the backup of the band. You got the main singer singing, and then after he hits blinded, then you've got the backup singers rolling in with their melody of blinded, minded, matters and tatters, so to speak, on the back end as that little echo to finish out that line. So did a great job with that.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I know when you were reading that, I was like, man, I want to be his background singer. I want to be his echo singer, you know. So yeah, he was spot on with that. And, well, with the last 90 seconds, I'm just going to quickly mention that 10 p.m. tonight we have Twisted Tuesdays with poetry inspired by the songs of Rodgers and Hammerstein. And then after that, 12 a.m. on Wednesday, 12:30 a.m. on Wednesday, is me and Captain B2. And for Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber, and they have poetry inspired by the explorer Gertrude Bell. And great show tonight, Rex. I had so much fun. And, of course, as always, I love listening to your comments and diving into the poetry.
Actually, it was a great night, yes. And thank you, Robbie, for getting on the board and everyone who contributed to the contest. Part two, we will do next Tuesday because there's at least probably a dozen writes will roll over. So don't fear. I'll send out the notice for that come next Monday with those notes of the poems to be read that night. So we will get everybody read before this contest is judged. So looking forward to that. Remember, Halloween's coming. There's a lot going on with Halloween contests and shows. Look for what's up. It's going to be a lot of fun that week. All right, Pam.
Absolutely.
Good evening.
All right,
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.